escape the heat to True North convenience stores and get any size True Oasis fountain drink for 89 cents with True Rewards. Cool that thirst with any of your favorite Pepsi fountain drinks for 89 cents. As a free True Rewards member, pick the perfect size for you. No matter if you're craving a big drink or a small sip, it's just 89 cents. Don't have the True Rewards mobile app? Find it in the Apple or Google Play Store to download and save instantly. True North convenience stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
On my podcast, Aspire with Emma Greed, we share the keys to succeed in business and in life. Listen to and follow Aspire with Emma Greed, an Odyssey podcast, wherever you get your podcasts.
TJ Sanders might not be there next week for the Bills. Like, if this rookie's not going, and we'll see if anybody else reports before the Bills do and has that tested. But right now, I feel like Sanders won't be there. Be my guess right now. I mean, it kind of sounds like none of the second round rookies are going to be at their team's training camps.
Well, it's
I don't even know if they can be if they're not signed. Is that the thing where they can be, but even if they're not signed, but there's like injury risk to that.
Yeah.
So okay, so he could be there, but I just feel like if he's not signed, then why take the risk?
So a couple things on this. I did see the collusion story about the guaranteed money, and I know that Pablo Torre and Mike Florio have been all over this document about it. It gets pretty legalese and in the weeds, and if you're a big football fan, maybe you do care, maybe you don't care about this kind of thing. The second round pick part of it, I know that Trey Harris is the first one to not show up.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like, you know, collusion's a funny thing when you have a union where they're all trying to do the same thing for each other, mm-hmm. and owners that are competing against that union try to do all the same things for each other. The idea that mm-hmm. owners would want to keep guaranteed money down is not the least bit shocking, because when they go to negotiations for a new CBA, they all get together and make a plan together. Mm-hmm. So to me, you know, collusion between competing businesses is one thing. It's for, you know, these airlines to rig prices on flights or something like that. In this case, you've got all these NFL teams that are thought to be competitors, but they are in the same league. They are not really competitors. They are on the same team. They are raising money together. They are splitting money from television networks, and that money is going bonkers. So the idea that they're colluding, to me, does make sense. Mm-hmm. With Trey Harris, in his case, the only reason he's the story is because that's the first team that went to camp. There are, what, 20 picks between him and the next guy that's supposed to sign? The first two picks of the second round, that's Carson Schwesinger and Jaden Higgins, got fully guaranteed deals. The next guy up is Nick Emmanuari mm-hmm. of Seattle.
Safety.
He got drafted by the Seahawks. He'd be the next one up. For Harris to either report or do anything would basically be jumping over 20 players in the timeline of, hey, what's going to happen here? Who's going to break first? So when we get to next week, and training camps start to open up in earnest with rookies, I bet we don't see 21 guys all sitting out. That's just my bet. Mm-hmm. I don't know if that's going to be right or not, but somebody here is going to break, right, in the second round, whether mm-hmm. it's a team or if it's a player. You know, you see the usual, all the GMs want to fight this other GM because he gave his player a contract, it's fair.
Yeah.
Like they're mad at him. Okay. Congratulations.
Well, that was, I mean, not maybe that this was fair, but that was part of the collusion part of it, was there were text messages between a bunch of different owners. I think the Chargers owner and the Cardinals owner were the ones that I saw made the rounds the most. And it was basically, I mean, the bad part of those texts, I think, was like, hey, if you set up Kyler's contract this way, and they named these quarterbacks, which is why I think they could actually take legal action against the teams if they really wanted to. But it was, hey, if you do this with Kyler, then I'll be able to do this with Justin Herbert next year. But I think what preceded it all was them both texting with each other about, like, are you kidding me, Cleveland? Like, you gave, what did you give Deshaun Watson? That calling the owner an idiot and, you know, being very upset with the Browns, basically, that you gave Deshaun Watson that contract, which I think is the source of all of this, by the way.
Right.
I think you're probably right. Like, 21 guys sitting out. Maybe we have a few, but, you know, I don't know who will want to, it depends. One guy's going to have to want to be that first through and, you know, do they care enough? I mean, if they're, I think what might make it different with them, if they see their, you know, their rookie counterparts as like a stronghold or something as compared to your teammates, but you really don't know your teammates yet. And that might make it a little different. Like James Cook will report to training camp in part. He said he wants his money, he doesn't want to get fined, but in part because he's a part of the culture now, right? And he knows all the guys, and he's been close to the Super Bowl with them, and they, you know, he might feel ingrained in everything that's happening with the Bills and feel like he's a part of it. Whereas a rookie that's only done what? Been to rookie minicamp so far in OTAs, he might feel more inclined to sit out if everybody else is, because he might not feel as ingrained in all that culture and that in that team atmosphere that, you know, somebody that's played there for 3 years might.
There's also the possibility that, you know, so Emenwori is really the next one up. They offer him a contract that's not fully guaranteed, but mostly guaranteed, and maybe it's missing two small pieces. He's like, fine, I'll sign it. Let's go to the camp. And now you're on to Judkins, by the way, who's in the news and has not yet signed.
They might want to skip over that one.
That situation
now
might be tough. The Texans also have another guy in the second round. So to have signed a fully guaranteed second round pick, they have another guy later.
I
don't know if they're going to do that there. So is it an interesting story? I think it is for the people that like to really get in the weeds on the league and the legalities and all that stuff. But
it's only really an interesting story for everybody if it graduates to such an extreme level, which is that they are all sitting out.
Right, the entire second round. I saw Chris Long said this, and he's probably right. He said on his Greenlight podcast, he said, basically, this is big news only because football's not happening yet. And the moment everybody gets to camp... And he wasn't trying to say that, like, to bury it, just that the moment everybody gets to camp, this story is going to go get buried, and we're going to watch guys catching footballs and watch guys throwing footballs.
Sure.
And we're all going to be in football mode, and that's that. And you might have a month or two to find out what's happening with this part of it, the collusion part of it, the guaranteed money part of it, and then it's, you know, Thursday night, and off we go. Thursday night football. We are 8 weeks away, less than 8 weeks away now from the start of the season, so... 8 weeks from yesterday is the Bills Ravens opener.
Real quick to end on this, one guy that I feel like will be tested more than anybody on this, if the other second round rookies haven't signed by next week, Tyler Shuck went 40th overall, one pick ahead of TJ Sanders. And is he not the betting favorite to start week one next year for the Saints? And if this thing is still going next week, when camp shows up, is he going to be like on the phone with his agent? Like, okay, what are we doing here? Yeah. I'm not going to go. Like, I'm maybe going to start. And if I'm not there for a week, does that put me behind the eight ball? Do they now put, who's the other guy? Spencer Rattler above me now to start? Like, if he might be thinking about starting more than he's thinking about any of the guaranteed money part of it. So that might be the guy that, you know, if nobody has signed in a few days, that guy might sign just because he needs to get rolling. He needs to be throwing footballs at training camp so that he can start for them in week one.
803-0550. I wouldn't expect anyone to have a real, you know, thought or take on all the second round picks are not signed.
No, I wouldn't think so.
Yeah, you know, TJ Sanders, we'll see how it goes. We'll see how he makes a difference for the Bills. I'm sure he'll get signed. I'm sure it'll all eventually figure itself out, maybe in the week after rookies report. It'll be 2 days late for every second-round pick. We'll see.
Mm-hmm.
But camp is approaching.
Well, if it's 9 days away, and then the day before veterans report, right? Mm-hmm. So wouldn't a week from today be when rookies report?
For the Bills, I believe so.
Okay, so a week from today for rookies.
Actually,
I think that's right.
In some cases, you go... Well, there's reporting to St. John Fisher. There's reporting to facilities.
Right.
You know... Whatever. For the Bills and their camp dates, I'll find the very latest on this. Players report. Oh, I'm sorry. Rookies report tomorrow.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. For
a week early.
Yep. Okay. A week early.
Sweet.
So they're going to be at St. John. Rookies will be at St. John Fisher tomorrow. Just rookies. And that's, you know, your draft class, your UDFAs. That's Max Hairston.
Mm-hmm.
That's not Sanders.
I guess tomorrow's
the day we find out for that.
Nobody's there, though, so...
Media's not there.
Would we even find out, really, if Sanders is there?
It's a good question.
I feel like we might not. Sal's in Italy, so we know he won't be there.
Sal is in Italy.
We know one media member definitely will not be there unless he is flying from Florence overnight to get to St. John Fisher.
To recap what the entire WGR staff is doing, on the one side, I got Nate's feet tweeted at the world. And on the other side, Sal tweeted a dinner from Italy that looked to be a bolognese and a glass of red wine, and it made me want to make the trip myself immediately.
Yep.
The people I've talked to around the league firmly believe that Joe Burrow is playing the quarterback position the best, but he's not the most feared. Those other quarterbacks we're talking about, their fear factor is thick when you go against coordinators. How are we going to stop them, not only with their arm, with their mobility? Burrow doesn't quite have that, but when we're talking about decision-making, accuracy, eye level, people around the league believe that Burrow is the very best at that. Look, are they wasting his talent in Cincinnati? I don't know if they're quite there yet, but the pipes are bursting a little bit. They're always putting out leaks or holes in Cincinnati, whether it's the O-line or the bad defense, but they have a quarterback that can win it all for them and win an MVP. He looks primed for it.
Jeremy Fowler on his list, talking to executives, scouts, coaches, dropping a random attempt at comparing something here, like a little, make an analogy. Joe Burrow's playing the quarterback position the best, which is to treat running like it's not also playing the quarterback position.
Yeah.
Joe, what if I offered you two cars? One of them is a really nice car.
Mm-hmm.
One of them is not as nice a car, but also flies. Which do you think would be the more desirable vehicle?
I believe the latter would be, give me the flying car.
You take a fly.
Yeah, give me the flying car.
Well, this one's better at just being a car.
Yeah.
Great. I'd prefer this vehicle.
Right. Right.
It might not be perfect, but what? We're just going to go with, he doesn't do the other stuff. Right. Yeah. Those other guys do the other stuff, and that stuff is of great value.
Yeah.
Anyway. I like that. You get a better one? Is that okay?
No, I'm glad you give that, because the first one that came to my mind, of course, No Air Show, was a golf one.
This guy hits all the fairways.
That's I was going to say.
But this other guy hits it into the first cut 338 yards.
I was going to say, like, this guy is the best golfer, driving the ball, irons. He can't putt.
Right. This guy's got better scores.
He doesn't know
how
to putt.
This guy's got better scores. This guy does this better. He shapes the ball. I don't know.
The running part of it,
it's being treated like it's not part of being a quarterback, and it most certainly is part of being a quarterback.
Absolutely.
Look who gets drafted now. Why is it a weak quarterback class? It's a weak if you don't get any guys that move.
Right.
A year where it's only Kenny Pickett, 20th overall. Mac Jones goes late as the fifth guy. Why? If you can't move, you can't play.
Right, and Mahomes can move.
He can definitely move.
Burrow can move a little bit, but The gulf that exists between Mahomes and Burrow, with Allen and Jackson as a passer, you could even argue that Allen and Jackson are better passers. Like, there is an argument to be made there, but they're all four pretty close together. You don't have to nitpick. But when it comes to their ability to run, the other two, Jackson and Allen, are so far above Burrow and Mahomes that I think you kind of have to ignore the rushing to put either Mahomes or Burrow above them, again, unless you're just doing the rings part of it. And is it interesting at all that the two guys that don't run as well are the two that have made it to Super Bowls?
Might be interesting. I'm just looking at interception numbers, because here's the other part of it for this conversation. We'll get a call in, Mark. Hang on one second. Like, Burrow only threw 9 picks last year.
Uh-huh.
That's pretty impressive. That's not bad at all. It's not bad.
What about Mahomes?
12, I think.
12. You know, one of the biggest inconsistencies, the biggest point that drove me nuts about Josh Allen was any idea that, the reason he's not as good or they're failing in the playoffs is because he's throwing interceptions. As if that was the Bills' record was terrible over Allen's career because he led the league in picks while the record was incredible while he was doing all of that. And then yet, No one just wants to mention that Patrick Mahomes is the second most interceptions in the NFL last 2 years.
Yeah.
We're just going to sweep that under the rug. So, oh, picks did matter, but now they don't.
But to me, that's another part of this. In a league where interception numbers by passing percentage, interception percentages are way down. Guys don't throw picks the way they used to.
Right, that's right.
So what's the thing that can truly set you apart? Like, here's Burrow. He threw 9 picks. Allen threw 6.
Right.
What's the other thing?
Herbert threw 3.
Right. And what's the thing that I think many have identified as a cheat code for the sport? It's something that Allen and Jackson do elitely, and the Mahomes used to be elite at but isn't, and that is sack avoidance.
Yeah.
Sack avoidance is part of being a quarterback. And here's Fowler talking about why Burrow finished ahead of Lamar. He finished ahead of Lamar because he plays the quarterback position. What do these scouts think Lamar Jackson is doing?
I don't know.
How many years? He'll finish 15-year career and be like, well, you know, they really had to make him be a quarterback. Make him be a quarterback. His touchdown interception ratio is 10-1. Mm-hmm. These guys are definitely being quarterbacks, and yet it's still kind of treated like running doesn't count, which is wild. Anyway, Mark in Tonawanda. Hey, Mark, good morning. Thanks for holding on.
Hey, good morning, guys. I love this this conversation. It's been going on the radio a lot. It makes me believe that these analytics can only get us so far, right? Like, at the end of the day, you're Dalton Kincaid or Josh Allen, you have to make that play in Arrowhead to beat Mahomes, right? Like, it's right. Sometimes you just have to go out and do it, and that's what Mahomes has done. You could say these stats all day long, but until Josh Allen wins a Super Bowl, it's all like a feel-good kind of thing. I just don't see the relevance of these little stats when, at the end of the day, just win the freaking game.
Well, yeah, I mean, if we're talking about who won a game, there's a scoreboard for that. We know who won games. But in a conversation 100%. About ranking the best players, I mean, what do you want to do? You've used, like...
I just think Josh Allen will always live in Mahomes' shadow until he wins that big game.
I wouldn't dispute that.
That's fine, but are you saying it's his fault?
I would say that... No, I don't think it's his fault.
Well, because that's the same thing. Like,
Sean McDermott.
But that's the same thing. Like, to me, what these numbers are doing is it's telling you the story of how we've arrived here. And if you look at the numbers of it and see what Allen has done, and you could even include the playoff numbers for this, you would never arrive at, well, the reason he's living in Mahomes' shadow is because Allen has been that much worse than Patrick Mahomes. It has been more because Patrick Mahomes has been getting a lot of help. In critical moments from his team where he can put up these average numbers, and guess what? They're going to the Super Bowl anyway.
Well, it's based on his play, too. I mean, Mahomes is
part of
unbelievable
it.
In these big games, right?
Yeah, he also punted.
You know who was really good, analytically really good, was Tyrod Taylor, right?
He wasn't great. Come on, he wasn't great.
These are incredible leaps.
Mahomes also went 9 drives without scoring a point in an AFC championship game and went to the Super Bowl anyway. Does he get, like,
that? I'm just shocked that you're taking, it's like, until we beat this guy, we can't really say anything. Well, like, okay.
No, we could say that we can say the pieces around Allen have to be better because he is matching the other guy. That's what you would be able to say.
Well, he had the ball at the end of the game in Arrowhead, and they didn't make the play.
He did make the play. Yes, he did. He made the play. His tight end didn't make the catch. There's no other quarterback in the world that gets that. Maybe Lamar Jackson. Lamar that gets that football on that play call with 2 unevaded rushers coming at him to get the ball 30 yards in the air to his tight end. There's nobody else other than maybe Lamar that gets that football there. He made the play.
Right. So someone else has to come up big for him. That's my whole point. I mean, so these stats are saying these things, but the wins aren't there. Wins over Mahomes aren't there, right?
No, that's right.
What are you telling us then?
So I'm saying that we could talk analytics until we're blue in the face.
Why do you keep talking about it like it's analytics? I don't know.
We're not mentioning analytics. We're not going into like EPA per play and expected completion percentage stuff. Like we're just looking at like the pretty basic stuff.
You're looking at his stats. I don't understand. What am I missing here? You're comparing these 2 guys' stats. We're discussing
who's better, and you're calling and saying
Super Bowl, the three-time winning Super Bowl quarterback, Patrick Mahomes, is going to always be better than Josh Allen.
Okay. Who's a better quarterback right now? Who's a better quarterback right now? Josh Allen or Peyton Manning? Right now.
Peyton Manning.
Right now he's better. He could throw. I'm saying who could throw for on a field today. Who's a better quarterback?
Josh Allen.
Oh, but Peyton's got some rings. Like, eventually you have to. It's a straw man.
What do you mean? Like, eventually
you have to be like, sure, this guy's got rings. Who's better? Who's better? Who's better? Matthew Stafford or Josh Allen? You might think Stafford. That's okay. It's okay to have any opinion. Mm-hmm. It's kind of like we got to earlier today. If you're going to be a rings person, you're a rings person. It's okay to be a rings person.
Right, the rings is why we do it. The rings is what we're waiting for, and I just don't, the numbers are not excusing the Bills. Which you could say it's doing, and maybe you'd think I'm wrong for this, is it's excusing Josh Allen, because I think Josh Allen today is a better quarterback than Patrick Mahomes is. But Mahomes has gone to the Super Bowl and won the Super Bowl. So what's my only conclusion then? If you think Allen's been better, then your only conclusion is the Chiefs have done a better job for their guy than the Bills have. That's it. And I don't know how that's disputable.
Thanks, Mark. I mean, I don't disagree with the overarching point of it'll always be like this until Allen wins. We know. That's rings culture. Rings culture is SGA and the Thunder win one ring and they're talking about his legacy.
Yeah.
We know.
Everybody though. There have been a lot this offseason that are willing to put Allen above. I mean, even in this poll, what did you say the number was? 60% voted Mahomes?
Yep.
That means 40%. 40%. That's not a small number of executives, coaches, and scouts are willing to put somebody above Patrick Mahomes. And that number is only going to climb if he continues to play like this. So even the people that are running the league are giving credence to the idea of, well, event you do have to play well, too. You can't just be a part of the winner, and it can't just be, well, you won rings 2 years ago, 4 years ago, 5 years ago, and you're automatically going to get the number one. Like, no, if you play like dirt for 3 years.
Which he's not played like dirt, but yeah. Right.
No, but he's not been the best quarterback in football.
Right.
And you can't not be the best quarterback in football forever and continue to get ranked number one.
It's a consistent thing. You really don't have that many in other sports where the guy that's the best hasn't yet won. It's McDavid. It's Allen.
Mm-hmm.
It's Lamar. Those are the three.
That's pretty much it. Yep.
And yeah, sure, if you want to be a rings person, like you're going to land there.
Escape the heat to True North convenience stores and get any size True Oasis fountain drink for 89 cents with True Rewards. Cool that thirst with any of your favorite Pepsi fountain drinks for 89 cents. As a free True Rewards member, pick the perfect size for you. No matter if you're craving a big drink or a small sip, it's just 89 cents. Don't have the True Rewards mobile app? Find it in the Apple or Google Play Store to download and save instantly. True North convenience stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed's sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
I'm Emma Greed, and I've spent the last 20 years building, running, and investing in some incredible businesses. The more success I've had, the more people started coming to me with questions. How do you start a business? How do you raise money? How do I bounce back from failure? On my new podcast, Aspire with Emma Greed, I'll be answering these questions and more through weekly conversations with the smartest minds out there. Listen to and follow Aspire with Emma Greed, an Odyssey podcast, available now, wherever you get your podcasts.
If you want to start on the Byram deal, all right, sure. It's July 15th. Let's talk a little Sabres offseason. My question would be, I got one question for everybody out there. If you still follow the hockey team in town, the Buffalo Sabres, and pay attention to their offseasons, if they had not traded Peterka because they didn't want to, like Peterka wanted them to move him.
Right.
So if he didn't want to be moved, what would the offseason have been? Because here's Bo Byram on the team, extended for 2 years, because you couldn't get a deal done. You couldn't get a trade done. If you had not traded Peterka, who wanted that to happen, he made that happen. What would your offseason have been? A Connor Clifton trade and Alex Lyon? Is that your offseason?
That might have been it, which is that is the equivalent of nothing.
That is nothing.
It is adding a rotational goalie and a third pair defenseman that maybe plays, if you're lucky, he's on the ice 17 minutes a night.
Yeah.
Like, if you're lucky. So, they bring back Byram, by the way, with the Peterka trade, adding a defenseman. Right? Like, their big move of the offseason was adding a defenseman. Two of their biggest three moves were adding defensemen. And yet, they still have, for now, kept him around. I don't know, though, that this means he won't be traded. It doesn't seem to make it the favorite, right? Like, all along, I've thought the most likely outcome was he would get dealt. And is that different now? Because he's under contract? I mean, I guess another team no longer has control over the contract situation. He signed a two-year deal, so if I'm right in the rules, he can't sign a long-term extension for a year. And if a team was maybe wanting to do that, that's now off the table for 12 months. So I think maybe it makes a trade harder to not deal him before arbitration and instead do a two-year contract. So I don't know. I kind of think it's more likely to me this morning than it has been for 6 months that he's going to start next season on the roster.
Mm-hmm.
And probably in the top pair.
On the top pair as an expensive pairing for Darlene, despite being a guy that is not good away from Darlene and good with Darlene, which is true for a lot, right?
That's right.
That's pretty much everybody. I mean, I don't hate that he's on the team. The big picture stuff with the Sabres, I wonder. I wonder if they've been spooked off of those early long extensions that they signed everybody to, right? For a while there, it was Cousins, Thompson, Samuelson. I mean, everybody got extensions.
Lukanen was the next year, but it was, that didn't go great.
You think they've been scared off those?
It'd be hard not to. I mean, how many of them really went great?
They thought it was good business, and it looks like they've been scared off it.
Yeah, the Tage deal went great. You sign Tage early, and you probably have him for $3 million less per year than you otherwise would have. But Samuelson, it didn't work, and Cousins, it didn't work, and Lukanen, it didn't work. So how's the strategy going right now? I mean, they really should have bought out Samuelson this offseason. That one went, I think, as poorly as it possibly could have after 58 games in the league, if that's the number. That's the number in my head. So that could be it. That would imply, though, that would imply they don't want to sign Byram to a long-term deal right now.
Yep.
That this wasn't all about Byram doesn't want to be here, although that might also be the case because there's no role here in a power play situation that he might be looking for, but the Sabres at the same time haven't ever seemed to give an indication that they were like trying to sign him to an 8-year contract, and it was Byram that was telling them no. I mean, whenever Kevin Adams has kind of been asked about him, he's never really mentioned him as part of the core, which I think is probably good, right? Like, because this player is, it's debatable how good he really is. But I don't think anybody's ready to tell you he's great, right? Would anybody disagree with that?
No.
That he's great?
No, he seems to be one of these players that you hope some GMs think more of him than he really is, right?
Right.
You hope that, I guess what you were hoping is that Byram got the glow up that Cousins got when he got traded to the senators, and all of a sudden it's like, oh, the workhorse defensive stalwart. And it's like, that's not at all what you're getting here. So maybe that's a part of it. I don't know. The whole thing, it's tough because keeping Byram doesn't have to be bad. He can be a decent player for you. You can love your top four now if you really want to. What? I mean, how long will it stick together? Dahlin and Byram and then Power and Kesselring.
Sure.
And that's my top four.
Then that sounds
and then
pretty
Samuelson's
good.
In my bottom pair with somebody else.
Timmins, probably.
Okay. And
like that on paper sounds like a pretty darn good blue line.
That's not bad. Right? Yeah. It's not bad. But the problem is you are very far from the playoffs. And what are you going to do to make up the gaps? What are you going to do to make a difference? You know, maybe the Byram deal, it's not exactly the same, but Garrett Wilson got a big contract yesterday. Why'd they sign him? Because he's good. Byram is not Garrett Wilson. But
no.
I don't want to live in a spot, Joe, where I'm endlessly saying, oh, get rid of everybody, because that's not the single player that makes you better. It's tough to evaluate the Sabres with Kevin Adams at the helm right now, because the general feel is that it's always in action, and it's always can kicking down the road. And this Byram deal looks like a can kick to me. We're not ready. We don't like the value. We don't have to get rid of him. So we'll sign him for 2 years, and what's the chance in the next 2 years he gets traded for a draft pick at the deadline? 80%? 40%? It's definitely a likely outcome. Right. I mean, if you were to set the over-under on years, how many more years will Byram play with the Sabres, you'd set it at 2.5, and everybody alive would bet the under.
Mm-hmm.
If you set it at 1.5 complete years, you might bet the under. Does he get traded at this deadline because... ready for this? Hey, Byram might be desirable. Guys, it's not just a rental. There's a year of term on this, too.
Mm-hmm.
We heard that a million times. The Sabres did that when they traded for Brad Boyes. So
yes.
It more represents a disappointment about the larger offseason. And I can't say that Kevin Adams could do everything he wants because no move clauses do exist. But I came to this offseason hoping it would be some version of, hey, could they package Paterka and Byram and 9 for something of real significance? Like, hey, can we dream big about a move? And instead, what did we get? Paterka got traded in a deal where it was, well, they did the best they could, and Byram got re-signed because they couldn't find a deal.
Right.
And the 9th pick got drafted because they couldn't find a deal.
Mm-hmm.
And Alex Lyon came in, which I think is maybe their best move this offseason, was to get a decent goalie at a good amount, a journeyman who might be able to help backstop your backup spot or even take the starting job if your backup or whatever, if your starter isn't good enough. So the whole offseason is just uninspiring, which is pretty much kind of their theme quite often.
Isn't it really hard to make the case that they got better this offseason?
It is hard to make the case they got better. It is easy to make the case that they got slightly different. Because they did. They got slightly different.
I love that set. It's easy that they got slightly different.
Slightly different.
Slightly different.
One forward of significance out, one defenseman of significance in. That's your offseason.
Right.
And your backup goalie, again, I still like that move because they needed someone that wasn't Reimer or Anderson, and this is their new version of that. This is their new Comrie. This is their new Alex Lyon is a guy that signed for the backup money to try and get some games in the net.
Yep. Well, like, really, what they did add, and I'm optimistic about, you know, a couple of these individuals, but their offseason consisted of the biggest guy they brought in was a defenseman who played on Utah's third pair last year. They brought in the Red Wings' backup goaltender, and they brought in a fourth liner from Columbus. And the Penguins' number six defenseman. That's their offseason. By the way, every one of those teams, look at the teams they brought guys in from that were not playing important roles. Kesselring, third pair defenseman in Utah. Lyon, backup goalie in Detroit. Timmins, sixth defenseman in Pittsburgh. None of these teams were good. They brought depth role players off teams that weren't even good from last year. And that's going to make them better. They got rid of a guy that was playing an important role off a team that wasn't very good in Paterka. So I wouldn't make the case that they're better unless Kesselring is way better than he was with the Mammoth. Or, like, again, here we are kind of waiting probably for young guys to save the day, right? Like, Owen Power, please, please become an elite defenseman. Like elite defenseman. Like Norris conversation, maybe defenseman. I don't know if he can even do that with, you know, being a second pair guy and second power play minutes, but whatever. That caliber of player. Or Benson become like a 70-point guy that's somebody catch lightning in a bottle. Because the moves that they make, I just think it's, sure, tinkering. It's tinkering moves.
It's tinkering.
It's stuff that can make you marginally better, but is it something that's going to make you make up a 15-point gap between what you were in the playoffs? Because that would be incredible to me if Michael Kesselring, Alex Lyon, and Josh Doan, who again I kind of all like to some degree, it would be incredible though if they were the catalyst to being a 75-point team versus being like a 90-point team.
And a 90-point team often is, you know, not enough.
It's not right. That's just in the race.
Right. Well, tinkering, is it very much like what they did with their coaching staff, which was what, change out the strength and conditioning coach? And what they do with GM, they tinkered. They added some pieces around the guy that was right. there. They right. didn't change the GM. They added a senior advisor.
Right.
They added a special assistant. So the offseason has been about tinkering in just about every department. They tinkered with the GM office, they tinkered with the coaching staff, and they tinkered with the roster. Maybe that's what they wanted to do. Because if Kevin Adams doesn't get them to the playoffs this year, if, by the way, they do, you ever think about that? What if they did make it? Would there be a parade? Would he feel like he's a made man now for a decade or
sure.
five more years?
Lifetime because contract.
You've shown you could get them there. So, all right, well, I know I can get them there. I'll do it again. Sometimes I wonder about that. Again, like the Byram deal on its own, I don't think is terrible. It's not. They certainly have the cap space. They are spending more against the cap than I thought they would. They're going to have about $5 million in space, which I'm impressed that they've spent that much. They could still, of course, spend five more, but I don't know who you'd spend it on.
No, there's no free
there's
agent available.
Out there now.
It would have had to have been a trade.
It just
a trade where you'd be acquiring more salary. You could want to do that all you want. That's trading a prospect for someone else's good player, right? That's a trade everybody wants to see. It's a trade they probably also want to make, but you're at the time of the year where I don't think you're really finding that from anybody. On the cap thing, this is kind of weird in the league, I guess, where remember when the NFL cap has gone up, where it really drastically went up the first time, and then after that, and the NBA was the same thing where, hey, you got all this new money, cap went up, go ahead. What did teams do? Spent it. Right? Like, they went nuts. All the NBA, I remember the first NBA offseason where that happened, and it was totally, remember Matthew Dellavedova?
This
Australian guy.
I remember him. If you're going to his contract, I do not remember
He was the guy that was with LeBron in that first finals against the Warriors. Hospital from chasing Steph Curry around.
Yes,
he got $30 million a year the first time the NBA cap went up. And everyone was like, what did you just do? $30 million a year. The NHL right now, everybody is way below the cap. Nobody spent the money. And is that just because nobody has money to spend? That could be because you can't renegotiate contracts in the NHL, right? NFL cap goes up, you can get a bunch of star players saying, oh, I want more. I want to rip up my deal and start over. And you can't do that in the NHL because, like, Tage Thompson can't tell the Sabres, I want $10 million a
year. That's right.
He can't say that. So the Sabres right now, like, they're middle of the pack. Nashville, Minnesota, Carolina, Seattle, Detroit, Pittsburgh, Calgary, Columbus, Winnipeg, San Jose, Chicago, Anaheim. All have more cap space right now.
Well, one possible explanation for that is, if we could borrow a headline from the NFL, collusion. And the major difference between the NFL and the NHL, so the cap goes up. That's great. The cap goes up. A lot of teams are not going to want to go anywhere near it. And in the NFL, why do teams spend above the cap? Why do teams work these contracts to... That's one thing you can do in the NFL. You can massage it and be way over the cap in a certain year, but you're under it on your numbers. In the NHL, if I'm Toronto, or if I'm trying to pick a team here, Boston, or teams that spend at the cap, Toronto has some room.
The teams right now that are spending right at the cap are Vegas, right. Montreal, Florida, Edmonton, Philly, the Rangers,
okay,
Tampa.
So what I'm getting at is I probably have a good handful of teams in the NHL that I know will not even come close to spending the cap ever and have no interest.
Right.
So now my market as an NHL team is, all right, how many teams are willing to give this player this money? Is it 10? It's not 32. Mm-hmm. In the NFL, you probably have to worry about more teams, 30 to 25 to 30 that will spend because the money's just, you know, printing every single year. And the NHL, I just don't know if that's true.
Mm-hmm.
You've got teams operating at a loss and getting revenue sharing money to stay above board. In the NFL, I've got every single player salaries paid by the television contracts.
Almost like if Myles Garrett were to hit the open market, how many of the 32 teams would be willing to give him $40 million a year?
32.
And when Mitch Marner hits the open market, how many of those teams would be willing to give him $15 million?
Six. That's what I think. Might be 10. Might be 12.
But it's not 32.
It's not 32.
Yeah.
Nope.
That's probably right.
Anyway, yeah, they did not spend all the cap space. All right. So Bo Byram is back for two more years. Maybe. Maybe they could just trade him. Maybe this locks in. I feel like they're not going to trade him, because if you were going to trade him, how does it work with arbitration, the rules on arbitration? He goes to arbitration. He wins that. You could still trade him.
You can, yeah. And all he can determine on his own is
term,
which they gave him the term he probably would have picked anyway.
He picked 2 years, and they gave him 2 years. They walk him right to unrestricted free agency. I don't know. To me, Byram is a guy that when they acquired him, it was somewhat exciting, and now he's just, I don't know, he's not exactly an inspiring player to me. They want to be tougher to play against. They want to be defensively strong. He's not that. He's not one of those players.
No, he's not that. In fact, if you look at like some of the fancy numbers, he's got some good offensive numbers, which are probably all with Dahlin. He's got some bad defensive numbers.
Yep.
Bad defensive numbers.
Well,
he's your most one-dimensional offensive defenseman in the whole core. Like, undoubtedly.
Yep.
Like, he is the most one-dimensional defenseman that they have. You can have guys like that, but you would like to believe they could coexist. Without the superstar. But I do like him with Dahlin more than others. I don't think you need to value that at $6 million a year. And it's why I think a trade still makes the most sense for him, because I can plug in a guy next to Dahlin and get pretty good results with almost anyone. Jacob Bryson's had good numbers with Dahlin. That being said, I do think I think Byram is better with Dahlin than others. His ability to move around the offensive zone, he's a good skater. I think he's got a good shot for his position. I think offensively, he does give you more from Dahlin's going to give his partner a lot of opportunities, no matter who that person is. And he's going to give you a lot of offensive zone time, because when Dahlin's on the ice, you're often going to have the puck. Byram, I think, can capitalize on that more than others. I just think you've seen now, though, that's not worth $6 million, because the second Dahlin goes out of the lineup and I'm on a 10-game losing streak while Byram's my number one defenseman, it looks like a disaster. So he's a fine player. I think with Dahlin, you're going to get good results, but you better not take him away from him.
The pressure of the season. I had a thought yesterday, and I don't want this to be viewed as negative, because but I think there are different types of sports fans. There are some sports fans that love it when your team is not thought of highly. Doubt us.
Yeah.
That's better. I don't want to be the favorite. You know, a couple of years ago when the Bills signed Vaughn and they're the favorites, people got nervous. Oh, I don't like when I'm supposed to win. I'd rather be a scrappy underdog and prove them wrong.
This is like the poll we put up on Friday when you weren't here of what would you prefer, being the best golfer in a group or the worst golfer in a group? And more people voted for being the worst golfer in the group.
Okay.
Yeah. You don't want the expectations up, right? Or the pressure of I've got to perform.
Okay.
Not it's a bonus if I perform.
I did see that poll you guys put up. I thought it was interesting. A lot of context in there. Follow-up questions.
Oh, but sorry. Yeah. And more people did say best, but still, it was pretty close. Anyways.
But it really comes down to, are you comfortable with acknowledging the pressure you're under? You know, our conversation there with Tyler, some people, they make a mistake. They want to burn the tape. You mentioned, like, Kincaid wanted to see that play. You know, the worst play you've ever had. Think about a Bills game. Have you ever watched 13 seconds back? Mm-hmm. Are you able to confront what was lost that day and go back and see it again?
Mm-hmm.
I've told you, I watched that Houston playoff game a bunch of times, because that's a big lead on the road. They blow that lead. It's kind of amazing. Have you watched it again? No, I can't. All right. I get that. You know, different strokes for different folks. The thought I had yesterday about the pressure on this Bills team, not just this year, but moving forward. And if they win the Super Bowl, then like, let's go win a second one. Like, we'll move to that quickly. Allen and Jackson are so unique in their sport right now. And we've also said, like, McDavid is here. As Hall of Fame players that have to win, you got to win. Mm-hmm. When we had that conversation yesterday with a caller yesterday calling saying Mahomes is the guy and Allen's going to live in his shadow until he wins something. Like, you can't really dispute that on the QB wins conversation. And it got me all the way to thinking about that conversation we had. I think it was Mark and Tonawanda that called yesterday about that. It got me all the way to this, Joe, which is, I don't want to say this and be viewed as like, oh, you're just doomsday scenarioing things. Like, that's not it. What it is for me is accepting where they live. I always say they live in the pressure. And a way that I thought to say it that I haven't thought about it before is, if they fail to deliver a Super Bowl in the Josh Allen era, that kind of becomes the identity of the franchise.
If they go Allen's career without winning?
Yeah.
Oh.
It becomes the identity. The way that four Super Bowl losses was the franchise's kind of identity to non-Bills fans, or even to Bills fans, for a long time.
Yep.
And that might have faded by now. We kind of had this conversation. You know, the people that lived through it still remember it. But now if you were to say to an NFL fan, hey, what do you think of the Buffalo Bills? Their first thought's going to be about how good they are right now and how Josh Allen's amazing. The franchise identity is what they are right now.
Yeah.
And that is not true of every team. Some teams are thought of for, like, the Jets. What are the Jets? Historically hilarious franchise. Never does anything. They never do anything well at all. You got Dolphins fans who would like to say their franchise identity might be a perfect season. The Patriots, what is their identity? It's the dynasty that they had with Belichick and Brady. You know, what you're remembered for versus what you are in the moment. And there is so much that they have to finish this job. They have to get it over the line. And when I say that, I don't mean to put out, like, negative vibes, because I think that I really think that Brandon Bean will kind of feel all that. And while this offseason we did not see them land a big whale and there was not this big, huge signature move, what he did the last two offseasons was kind of build, eat your vegetables, do the roster building in the proper way so that Josh Allen's window 2.0, which I think we would all kind of say, like, this is window 2.0, there will be somewhere that move. If they're not getting there, that move will come. I don't think they have to be desperate, but I think they have to be aware that once they get another season like they've had, let's say we get to the deadline and they are on track for the one seed. It looks good.
Yeah.
Granted, it won't be that deep into the season, about halfway. But I feel like we'll be saying, go get that guy. Do it. Trade a future first. Trade this. Like, it's, there will be times to push in further. He did it with Vaughn. He did it before in window one. And then they kind of had to transition back into window two. And now we're kind of at the doorstep of that where, hey, the roster is full. There's not a lot of holes.
Allen's cap hit really isn't that high amongst the other paid quarterbacks in the league.
Right. You have, you have the built-in cheat code of who he is. You have that he agreed to take a little bit less than he probably could have.
Yep.
And you have, it's all here in front of you again. So I just started thinking about the pressure on the franchise to exhaust all avenues. It can't just be what it was kind of last offseason and this offseason, which are successful plans. And again, like, roster building and foundation building, it can't just be, well, you're always going to be good.
Right.
Which is kind of what it is right now. And I'm pretty confident that it won't always be like that. That the pressure of what they are, they know. McDermott knows. Bean knows. They're close. You know, his post-game or postseason talking about knocking on the door. We're right. We're close. We know we're close. Like, I just wonder if some days he wakes up and thinks, like, I'll do whatever it takes. And some days he thinks, I got to be patient, you know?
Well, that's kind of the message he gave at the end of the season, wasn't it? That we don't have to do anything brash. We don't have to be desperate. We just have to do what we've been doing and keep knocking on the door, and eventually it's going to open for us. That's pretty close to what that was said at the end of the season. And how does that feel as a mentality, though? How does that feel as a strategy of, we just got to keep doing what we're doing? Keep doing what we're doing, and eventually it's going to happen.
I agree. Keep doing what they're doing. What I'm saying is you can't...
Well, you keep doing what they're doing would maybe not include... Not that they haven't done this, because they have done this too, would be the move you're talking about, which is they're looking good, and... You know, in the middle of the year, maybe Pittsburgh season's off the rails, and they want to—they're ready to trade T.J. Watt,
right?
And oh, he's available. Middle of the season, prorated contract. You don't have to take on the whole cap hit. You want to do it? Who wants to do it? First round pick. And if the Bills are in looking like they're in the driver's seat, and like this could be the year, isn't everybody going to be? And not like whether fans would want to do it. Would they want to do it?
Yes.
Would they want to go to? Well, we did this with Vaughn. We're looking good, but this could really be the year.
Yeah, I think
this could be a finishing piece that we can acquire in the middle of the season.
If you look at their deadlines, I mean, they have made moves.
Yeah.
They really have. Going back to when they had a chance to end the drought, it was Kelvin Benjamin.
Yeah.
We have good start. We got to get this thing over the line. What if we make the playoffs?
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's going to be great for us.
Right.
At that point, that was kind of their Super Bowl was ending that drought. They did it in year one, and in year one they went and made that move.
Yeah.
Not a huge move, but I just think he's got a buyer's mentality, and he's been good and responsible and just patient the last two off seasons,
mm-hmm.
calculating to a degree. And I still think that whole like the whole big,
there's a sunglasses meme in there still somewhere.
Like the whole big baller bean persona that was created. That was because he was a guy that went out and did a bunch of stuff. And these last two off seasons, there's been less of that.
It's been more calculated and
a little bit.
Yeah.
A little bit. And
yeah,
I
agree with that.
I just feel like that will come out again at some point.
But you're saying because of the pressure of
because it will have to. Because
your legacy is you never won.
Your legacy can't be I had Josh Allen and I didn't win.
Not only that, I don't know if they think in this way. I'd like to think they would. Like, maybe they think about their own legacy and how they'll be remembered if they were to never win one with this quarterback. How Bean and McDermott would be remembered.
That's
how the franchise would be remembered. But there also is your fans for this. Because if you never win one with this quarterback, who is arguably the best in the league, every year that he plays, might be the greatest athlete that's ever played the position. If you don't win with him, your fans are going to feel like they are truly never going to win. You're going to leave your fans, and you'll probably be gone. They'll be gone at that point. They're going to leave everything here without winning one, with everyone just sitting here feeling like it's never going to happen. That's what the feeling would be.
803-0550.
And you got to avoiding that. The value in avoiding that.
I think it comes down to, do you want pressure? Do you like pressure? This is earned, right? Expectations are earned, and the Bills have earned these expectations.
Escape the heat to True North convenience stores and get any size True Oasis fountain drink for 89 cents with True Rewards. Cool that thirst with any of your favorite Pepsi fountain drinks for 89 cents. As a free True Rewards member, pick the perfect size for you. No matter if you're craving a big drink or a small sip, it's just 89 cents. Don't have the True Rewards mobile app? Find it in the Apple or Google Play Store to download and save instantly. True North convenience stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
On my podcast, Aspire with Emma Greed, we share the keys to succeed in business and in life. Listen to and follow Aspire with Emma Greed, an Odyssey podcast, wherever you get your podcasts.
I don't know if you heard on the way in, we were having a conversation about like some, I guess it was best case scenarios for individual players. I opened up at the 7 o'clock hour with a James Cook scenario. Mm-hmm. We talked about, and then Josh brought up an idea about Elijah Moore. Like, oh, what if he has a huge year and the Bills extend him? And for me, that's an interesting conversation. Like, what does a great year even look like for an Elijah Moore? Right, like. There's a great year for Elijah Moore, and then there's a objectively great year for a receiver.
Sure.
And, you know, this offense, the way that it's kind of designed, the way that it kind of runs with all these pieces, all this everybody eats stuff, you might not have an avenue to have a objectively great season, like 1,500 yards. But Moore could definitely find a spot.
Yeah, I mean, I was going to say those are two completely different things, just a really good wide receiver season and what Moore could realistically do within this offense. I actually, about a month or two ago, did a projection for best case scenario for Elijah Moore, and I didn't just like throw out random numbers. I took how much better Stephon Diggs, Cole Beasley, and John Brown got with Josh Allen, almost the Josh Allen multiplier. Going from Elijah Moore's best season, if you plug in those numbers to how much better Diggs, Beasley, and Brown got here in Buffalo, it's like 63 catches, 750-ish yards, and two touchdowns.
For Moore.
And that's based off his best season in term. And I think it's like a little over 100 targets. I heard you on the way in. Like, are there even 100 targets or, you know, 115 targets for Moore to get within this offense? Probably not. So I think any Bills fan, I think McDermott, I think Josh Allen would love 65 catches for 750 yards and two scores from Elijah Moore that they added post-draft. And I think that probably equates at most to a contract around $10 million. So I think sticking with the everybody eats mantra, if we're thinking, you know, how they like to spread the football around, they also will then like to spread the money around. You would have Shakir at $13 million. In this hypothetical, Elijah Moore at like $10 million, there's $23 million for two guys instead of paying $30 million for one.
Yeah, in that scenario, you're probably saying goodbye to Curtis Samuel. I mean, yeah. I would imagine he's not going to last if Moore pops. It is kind of interesting and maybe wild, but one of the biggest reasons that I think Bills – there's two reasons that Bills fans are not maybe worried about the receiving core. One is the success they had last year, and that's a point that Brandon Bean makes. And it's not wrong. They had a lot of success last year. They did, of course, have to adjust it on the fly, making the Amari Cooper trade. I'm trying to think of if anybody could have predicted. No, what'll happen is they'll sign a guy post-draft, and then you'll all be like, oh, all right, I feel good about this now. Moore's kind of unique in that way because as a former second-round pick who went to the Jets and then the Browns, it just seems like the idea that this bump with Allen that you're talking about could happen, that's not hard to grasp. That's not hard to envision that something could go well for him like that. I like the skill set. The one thing I wonder about is, does he do something that they don't have? Is there more verticality to his game that they don't have somewhere else?
He's mostly a slot receiver. He's around the same size as Shakir, but he ran 4.34 coming out of Ole Miss. I know Curtis Samuel also was a low 4.3 guy, and we didn't really see a lot of that big playability besides in the playoff game against Denver from him last year, and the Bills will say he was injured, you know, the foot injury that he had. I do, though, think that Moore will provide a little bit of more of a vertical element, especially compared to what Shakir does out of the slot.
803-0550, our phone number, 1-888-550-2550. We brought up James Cook. We brought up Elijah Moore. Bring up anybody you want here. Bring up a player and give us the best case scenario for them for this season, whether that's a breakout, it's a domination. You know, We're all expecting Super Bowl. I put up that question about James Cook. What's his best case scenario?
And everyone said Super Bowl.
I tried so hard to make
I know
it.
You did.
So hard to make it so people could not write in. They win the Super Bowl. Like, yeah, we all know that, everybody. Like, of course, their best case scenario is the Super Bowl. It is a Super Bowl or bust lifestyle right now. The Bills are simultaneously under a lot of pressure to do it. And also, the pressure doesn't even really start for a while.
I know.
Training camp is going to be just like, just don't get hurt. As long as you don't get hurt, we're going to be fine. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, we've even seen them go 6-6 and be in disarray and then, you know, I'll be fine.
Yeah.
There's very much a belief that everything will just be fine. I won't be under any real stress until, when did the stress start last year? The Baltimore game?
Yeah.
That was it?
Yeah. Really?
Denver in the playoffs, they gave up a touchdown early, and maybe you have like a moment, and they just blow their doors off.
But they had done that in the wildcard round in almost every
hiccups
year. Like early
Miami. You know,
Miami, the Colts game was tight.
Pittsburgh.
Yeah, it was like, but it was always, and I like heard you guys mention it on the way in, you always felt, and this kind of is the case in every game, felt like, oh, Josh Allen's going to do something at some point, mm-hmm. and they're going to get one stop, and they're going to, you know, score, get a stop, and then score again, and score 14 points in like 3 minutes, and it's going to completely change the game. So yeah, it really was not until the playoffs that you felt any bit of nerves or pressure on this team.
Yeah, it's tough. It's not tough. It's a great life to live. It's the same as the Ravens right now. The Bills and the Ravens just kind of live in the same mm-hmm. neighborhood. The one thing that separates these two teams, and I wonder if there's a lesson here about roster building. Jeremy Fowler's top 10 players, right? Top 10 in every position. Christian Benford did not make the list. Let's just pretend he did, because he probably should.
Yeah.
That would give the Bills, I think, 4 top 10 players. And the Ravens have 6. And the Ravens are thought of as having maybe more elite players.
Well, they had more Pro Bowlers last year. Yeah. They had like 8 Pro Bowlers.
And the Bills had 1. Right, exactly. The Ravens are thought of as a more, I don't know about top-heavy roster, but I think just a better roster outside of quarterback, which is its own debate. Mm-hmm. And the Bills are this like really well-structured, buttoned-up, pretty deep team where we came into this offseason thinking, where will they make a move to get a blue chipper? And they didn't get an established one. We'll find out if one of these guys they did get can become one, whether that's, you know, a Joey Bosa risk or a Michael Hoyt perfect fit or a draft pick. But you know, they've kind of spent 2 years keeping things structurally intact mm-hmm. and making sure that they're not going to become, I don't know, I don't even know the cautionary tales here. Keeping it together with Josh Allen, you know, they've managed to walk the line. They've managed to do it.
They've proven, yeah, that there was no regression from him or the team. The defense has still been near the top of the league in limiting big plays, creating turnovers across multiple seasons, which is basically unheard of. One last point that I want to mention that kind of is a segue to that. It's so crazy going from the Stephon Diggs era and being so wide receiver one focused, and then thinking, okay, even if Elijah Moore has a really good season and the Bills give him a $10 to $12 million contract, that would be Shakir, Moore, and Josh Palmer, who we haven't talked about yet, combining for like $30 to $35 million
yeah.
when that's what one receiver, you know, a Jamar Chase-type wide receiver is getting in today's NFL. If you were to pose that to anyone, I mean, maybe some people would rather have just Jamar Chase or Justin Jefferson, but it's almost like, why would we have not in the past wanted to say, let's diversify
sure.
and have 3 really good receivers all making the same as what one receiver can do? Because if you take out Stephon Diggs in one game, we saw that the Bills' offense can really struggle.
I would push back on that. I would say diversifying is fine. Expensive diversification is a choice. Like, that's what the Bills are kind of doing mm-hmm. here, because there are teams that diversify and they do it with not a lot of money spent. They just do it with draft picks. Like, that's ultimately at the root of my biggest disagreement with how the Bills have built. Of course, again, it doesn't mean like they're doomed, but middle class money at receiver is not something that a lot of teams do.
No,
and,
that's true.
And, you know, I'm not sitting here saying the Bills should have drafted Matthew Golden. I wonder if they would have if he was there. They very well might have, but he wasn't there. His salary this year will be lower than every Bills receiver, basically,
yeah.
as a first-round pick. So it's an odd way to do it. You could say that why pay a $30 million receiver when I can pay 3 $10 million receivers? Mm-hmm. And the answer is because you could pay $130 and then get 2 draft picks.
Yeah.
And it's the same, except you have a guy that has a lot more gravity against the defense. So I don't think I appreciate what the Bills have done from a whatever. Forget the money for a second. If they want to do it this way because they feel like this fit for them is a better fit for structurally offensively,
uh-huh.
that's fine. I don't think you can say they're saving money doing it.
No, that's true. And we haven't talked about Keon Coleman in this, and I was lower on him than probably any other draft analyst out there when they picked him. If the Bills had Ladd McConkey on the roster now, and you're like, hey, look, they've added some mid-tier veterans, you like Josh Palmer, you like Elijah Moore, oh, and they have this young, like you're saying, really cheap wide receiver entering year two, you would be like, oh my God, like this.
They're flush.
This is absolutely a loaded wide receiver group. So if you do believe in Coleman and you think that step is coming, he's going to take the leap, then suddenly you do have that advantage financially with a second round pick that's still young, making barely any money at
all.
Well,
let's get to Coleman there. You said you were lower on him than maybe anybody?
Yeah, I think I had third or fourth round grade on
him. Okay, so you, I mean, kind of hated the pick. Maybe not hated, but not a fan of the pick.
I had Ladd McConkey as a first round grade, and they were both sitting there on the board, yeah. And I thought he should have been the pick. Maybe the size and some injury concerns with him were the reason that the Bills didn't pick him. And traditionally, like, not every single wide receiver has been big, but think of the time in Carolina and then bringing in Kelvin Benjamin back to Buffalo. Mm-hmm. The Bills, and then they had success with the smaller receivers. I think the Bills wanted more size in the receiver room, that Coleman gave them what they didn't have. Maybe that was the ultimate kind of equalizer why he was the, or separator why he was the pick.
Do you feel better about him now?
No.
Okay.
I mean, him bulking up, that's not the problem. I think the separation ability and the fact that contested catch win rate is not really sticky year to year. Like, I mean, if you're Mike Evans, sure, it is. If you're Justin Jefferson, it is. But in general, a wide receiver that was really good in contested catch situations in college doesn't always translate to the NFL. You can have a season where you are at 70%, then at 30, then at 50, then at 20, then at 80. So to just rely in this day and age at receiver on rebounding the football over extremely athletic, very good ball skills, corners, it's not something that I want my wide receiver to hang his hat on. And I think unless he moves in the slot, that's where Coleman is going to have trouble.
Which is something so far the Bills do not seem to be interested in. And in fact, I don't even know if they have the snaps in there. They have a lot of guys in there that take those snaps.
Although I will say, and I tweeted this recently, I think I'm probably a victim of doing this. We get a little bit, I think, stuck in slot and outside, especially with how Joe Brady...
Tight formations.
Like, everyone's in the slot. It's not on the hash mark near the sideline for two wide receivers, and it's not Michael Irvin, Andre Reed.
Right.
It's very much open space. But I do get what you're saying, that the Bills do have seemingly like three or four already slot receivers. So there's Coleman. Can he really fit in there? I'm not sure.
Yeah. 803-0550, our phone number, 1-888-550-2550. Of course, training camp begins Wednesday for the first practice. We'll be live at training camp Wednesday, Thursday, Friday for morning practices. We'll continue to bring things from St. John Fisher. Chris Trapasso joining me here in studio on WGR. For this this Coleman conversation, you know, you're still skeptical. I was reading Matt Harmon yesterday. He posted his Xavier Worthy profile.
Okay.
And it's funny, there are a couple of, I think, parallel ideas. And what Harmon wrote about Worthy looking back on his first year was he is not a guy that does everything. What he does well, and the Chiefs are able to use that quite a bit.
Exactly.
And that's really it. Like, would Xavier Worthy, and I'm only bringing up Worthy because the two of them are always tied together because of that trade. And it got me thinking about Coleman, which was basically there's the best version of Keon Coleman and how the Bills get that. Will they use him that way? Will they find the way to use what he does well as the Chiefs will find a way to use Worthy? And the thing about the Chiefs, if you listen to a lot of their offseason, a lot of their talk is about basically getting back to the 50 touchdown Mahomes years. They want to find the long ball again. They want to get
They were a small ball the last like 3 years.
That's right. And they want to get back to long ball.
Mm-hmm.
And they want to unleash Worthy over the top with Rice, who we'll see about a suspension for him. So while the cover two and everybody got kind of reined in and became small ball, Andy Reid and the Chiefs are actively talking about wanting to get it back over the top and kind of hit again. And that's probably a lot of their genesis for the Worthy pick is that's what he does well.
Yeah.
And that's not something you're going to get out of Coleman, but Coleman's going to have whatever, something that he does well. The question is, can the Bills get it out of him?
Yeah, I mean, it will really all come down to, and I said it's in general not sticky. Maybe the Bills feel like it can be predictive, that Keon Coleman just needs to be that above the rim wide receiver. And I think there's it's no coincidence that to me his best game in Seattle, where he jumped over to Tariq Woolen in the end zone and then had that like down the numbers, like back shoulder catch, like almost like down the seam.
The broken play
like,
one?
No, the one that was like it maybe it was a broken play. Where he kind of like was covered well, but Josh made a perfect throw back shoulder, like down the numbers, made a catch there. That's how he has to play. That's where he has to live. Again, I do think he needs to be featured in those condensed formations on shallow crosses where the two receivers cross and kind of try to create confusion in or just a lot of traffic in the middle of the field because he's just not going to get open
on the outside.
On the outside, on his own accord, with twitchiness, with explosion, with subtlety as a route runner. So if they can get that out of him and say, hey, Josh, like just throw it up to Keon Coleman and let's at least see if he's really a good rebounder. That's, to me, the best avenue for the Bills to tap into all of his potential.
Escape the heat to True North convenience stores and get any size True Oasis fountain drink for 89 cents with True Rewards. Cool that thirst with any of your favorite Pepsi fountain drinks for 89 cents. As a free True Rewards member, pick the perfect size for you. No matter if you're craving a big drink or a small sip, it's just 89 cents. Don't have the True Rewards mobile app? Find it in the Apple or Google Play Store to download and save instantly. True North convenience stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
I'm Emma Grade, and I've spent the last 20 years building, running, and investing in some incredible businesses. The more success I've had, the more people started coming to me with questions. How do you start a business? How do you raise money? How do I bounce back from failure? On my new podcast, Aspire with Emma Grade, I'll be answering these questions and more through weekly conversations with the smartest minds out there. Listen to and follow Aspire with Emma Grade, an Audacy podcast, available now wherever you get your podcasts.